The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of Track Wrestling, joined by our own ASAP Rocky, Andy Hamilton, also of Track Wrestling. How are you this fine day?
I'm wonderful, Kyle. How about you?
I am so well because there are so many things to be well about.
Such as?
We have a great tournament that Track Wrestling is going to be hosting called the Track Wrestling Preseason Championships in La Crosse, Wisconsin on Saturday, November 9th.
Yep.
That's one thing to be excited about. U23s, which will be on Track Wrestling, is coming up later this month and into November. And the kickoff of the college wrestling season is always reason for celebration. And this year is going to be a little funky because of all the Olympic red shirts. It's going to be wonky a little bit.
And
okay,
USA Wrestling Preseason Championships live on Track Wrestling last weekend of October while you're in Budapest.
That's true. I will be.
I will be in Des Moines.
You will be in Des Moines. I'll be in Budapest. Thing is, you know Des Moines so well. You live there, and it's only fair that you go to Des Moines, your old stomping grounds where you kind of did your thing, and you just have so many connections with the state. You were born in Ames, went to Williams, went to Iowa, went to Iowa City. Now you live in Cedar Falls, so you really got the state covered.
Yeah, kind of. The eastern, like central eastern half, two-thirds. Haven't spent a whole lot of time out in western Iowa.
Yeah.
And that... Northwest, but Southwest. I did spend back in college when we were at Ellsworth playing baseball. Our road trips for spring break were spent in Clarinda, where we'd sleep on a gym floor on air mattresses. Not exactly Panama City no, Beach, it's but
not. It's not.
Clarinda is beautiful that time of year.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is.
There was a closet full of like PE equipment, and you'd have all these wiffle balls, and the lights would go out, and you'd hear these wiffle balls like,
oh man,
whipping in the air across the gym and hitting people in the face.
But as it relates to Division I wrestling, you've got it all covered. No one can say you're biased because of what you have. You're born in Ames, Iowa State, live in Cedar Falls, Northern Iowa. You went to the University of Iowa, Iowa City. So you got it all covered.
I'm sure someone would say that I am.
Well, of course
I get that all the time.
Yeah. Of course they're going to say you're biased, but that's just the name of the game. And it's fun to not be biased in track. And I hope we do a good job of that. And I hope anyone that listens will give us a review and let us know what you think, because that's how we keep making traction. That's how we grow the sport, is incrementally tell us how we're doing. We appreciate the platform that we have on a couple areas. We have it on trackwrestling.com. We have it on matttalkonline.com. Just kudos to Jason Bryant for really providing a great platform for podcasts and including us in that with a variety of podcasts that we have. So give us a review, email us, tweet us, let us know what you think. We love questions. We've had some questions as of late, but as we get into the mailbag, we want that mailbag really heavy because we want that over our shoulders, and we just want to dig in deep and have you grill us with questions. That's our goal. So fire away. And I'm going to fire away, not necessarily at you, but this, you talked about playoff baseball, how it's really wonky right now. And that's my word right now, is wonky.
Wonky.
It gets really interesting in playoff baseball. And you can elaborate on that. But anytime you get to the postseason, it really does show something that's different. And Mark Perry's a good example. Spencer Lee, a lot of these guys that maybe notch a couple losses through the season, Jay Jaggers, but somehow they're able to rise above in the times it matters most, and they're winners in the postseason. And you were even saying that with what the Dodgers making pitching decisions, and they're putting in starting pitchers just for an inning. It's crazy how you just change your mentality a little bit when it comes to the postseason, even though you hope you don't have to.
There's some parallels to wrestling here. You can draw some wrestling parallels in that we compete an entire season under one format, mostly duels. And then for the biggest tournament of the year, it's the first 3-day format of the entire year in an individual setting.
Yeah.
Whereas baseball, compete 162 games from start to finish. Then you get into playoffs, one game wild card, then a 5-game series. And in that 5-game series, everybody is managing basically for today. You're not really holding a whole lot back for tomorrow. If you got a chance to win, you're throwing all of your top bullpen arms at it. All hands on deck. You know, it's just a totally different sense of urgency, but it's interesting how it becomes a whole different ballgame. I mean, that's why you see instances like, I think St. Louis Cardinals one year got into the playoffs with 83 wins and won the World Series. And San Francisco Giants three times in as a wild card, if I'm not mistaken. And they won the World Series, I think, 11, 13, 15. But once you get into the dance, everybody's got a chance.
Well, and parallels, but kind of opposite too with wrestling, and we're seeing this more and more, and it gets disappointing, is that, hey, if these guys aren't absolutely healthy, they are not going to be wrestling a college match, because as we've talked about, duels really don't mean anything at all.
Yeah.
And so now it's all about preserving for that postseason. So you really don't have to have much of a record. You could have 9 qualifiers in the Big Ten and you get your spot to the dance and you can go on and do your thing. So the idea of needing a healthy record in college wrestling is diminishing every year. And look at Spencer Lee this year. You have a guy that, hey, maybe he wasn't ready in some matches and hold him out of some dual meets and just make sure he's ready for the times he needs to be ready, because hey, Spencer Lee probably doesn't need a whole lot of match preparation. He's good, and a lot of these guys are good. So getting a 50 match season, that's really a thing of the past. You just aren't going to see these guys just go through a gauntlet just because, hey, I need to be battle tested and be ready. These guys are ready now, and we're seeing that more and more. It's a different game in wrestling right now.
Yeah. And then the other thing, you know, when we're talking about the dynamics of playoff baseball versus college wrestling, unfortunately we go into third week of March and we can usually pin it down to one or two teams that are going to win the national title.
Yeah.
Hopefully we get into a period here in the not so distant future where there's 5, 6, 7, 8 teams that if they get hot, have a legit chance to win a national tournament. I don't know that, that we're ever going to see that in the near future, but hopefully. And how many teams have won it total, Kyle?
In the history of college wrestling, I think it's 12 now.
I think so. With something like that.
12, 13, with Ohio State and Penn State. Yeah, I think it's been 12. And then if Indiana won it, but it was unofficial at the time. But yeah, I mean, I think it's 12 teams have won it. So not many. And back then there were a lot more teams that could have won it. So it really is a golden unicorn, as you like to say, with some athletes, you know, winning championships. It's the golden unicorn to win an NCAA title as a team. That's impossibly hard. And if I could get on my soapbox again, last week I ranted a little bit about just the criticism that some guys take, and it's unwarranted. Just put this in perspective. There have been 77 human beings from the United States that have won a world or Olympic title. And that's going back to 1896. And that means John Smith won 6. So he counts as one individual. So there's been 77 human beings from the United States, Greco, women's freestyle, men's freestyle, worlds or Olympics, that have won a world or Olympic title, at least one. And that includes 1904, when the United States was the only country represented. So every American was going to win a gold medal that year.
It's a good year to make the world team, right?
That's a good year to win the Olympics, to be on there. But
make the Olympic team.
Right. Yeah. So to criticize someone that has won a title, and had a lengthy conversation about this with Frank Papalizio of Journeyman Wrestling, like, we called it insanely hard. And he just said, I don't know that that really represents how hard it is, how impossibly hard it is to win a senior level world championships. It is insanely hard. So I take a little bit of offense when people from the sidelines who have never even sniffed that level, oh, he needs to adjust his training, or he needs to make some adjustments in how he makes shots. It's like, hey, you got to probably think they know that. You got to think they probably know that, hey, there's some things happening. But just like playoff baseball, funny things happen. And when you get in that moment and you're on the mound or you're on the mat and it's pressure on you and you got the whole world watching, it's completely different than just a regular match. It's totally different. And those people that can actually pull it out and win it, my hat's off to you, because it's impossibly hard. I mean, just look at that. 1896, 77 people on that wall at USA Wrestling. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. So
think about that, though. You spend 365 days training for that one moment, that one day, 2 days now, 2 day format, probably 30 minutes total of wrestling. And sometimes a deal like Jordan Burroughs comes down to what happens in 20 seconds.
It's insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the room for error between being 5-time world champion, Olympic champion, world Olympic, and breaking John Smith's record, 7. It's what would we figure? 5 seconds, maybe?
28. I mean, if you look at the whole scenario, it's 8 seconds last year in Budapest. Okay. And then it's like 16, the final 15, 16 seconds this year in Nur-Sultan.
Yeah.
But the scores came inside 2 seconds on each of them.
Yeah. So, yeah, just what a great example, just a glaring example of how close history is and just that you need breaks. And even going back before that, you look at Jordan Burroughs and how close it was to not making a team
in 2017. Years. Yeah,
it was, his legacy was on the line there. And then how close, once he gets there, he's behind in every match at the 2017 World Championships and has to come back. So the dude's a winner.
No doubt.
I mean, that's the thing you got to say about Jordan Burroughs. That dude knows how to win. And if the chips are on the line, he's still the guy you want to pull it out for you. That guy is good. And hey, let's get him.
A lot of heart.
Oh man. He knows how to pull him out. So once again, kudos to those athletes, those 77 through the history to be able to have that. And it's the other sad commentary here is, what do we figure? If you wanted to watch Jordan Burroughs this year in the United States, you had 2 days to do it. Isn't that right? You had
Beat the Streets
and Final X. That was it. 3 times on American soil for our top athletes. That's a little rough. That's rough that we only have that. You can watch it online. You watch them overseas, which is fantastic. But our best domestic stars, you get to see them live 2 days out of the year. That hurts. And you go back to what you said, just in that we're that reverse pyramid, and that we have all of the youth movement. We get the interest at that level. And then why are we just falling off at our best level? I wish it's
backward, right?
Yeah. It just doesn't.
It's really, really strange. I mean, you play more games. NFL plays more games than college. Yeah. That plays more game. College football plays more games than high school football. Well, take that back. Some states, if you go deep enough into the playoffs, play 15, 16 games. But for the most part, the college season is longer than the high school season. And same thing, Major League Baseball, 162 games. College season is probably going to be about 50 to 60 games for the best teams. High school season, probably, depending on where you are, you're probably going to play anywhere between 30 and 45 games, maybe. And meanwhile, you're wrestling some states like Alabama. They're wrestling upwards of 80 matches in a year. And then, like you said, we're seeing fewer and fewer college matches. And then even on the international front, fewer and fewer. So it's really weird, isn't it?
It is. And then you just even go back to what we were talking about, how the college wrestling game has changed as far as just guys holding out. And I don't blame them. If for a dual meet, if you're a little tweaked and you say, my knee's a little tweaked, and you're one of the power four schools that we talked about, and you're going against a team that you know you're going to throttle, and you can get another guy experience. Why wouldn't you put that guy in as a coach? Why wouldn't you put all your chips in for the only tournament that matters? You could say the qualifier, but that does matter too, because it qualifies you for the NCAA championship. So really there's two tournaments that matter. You want seeding, and you can say, yeah, it matters because you have a formula to get seeded, but we've kind of seen that go by the wayside too. Sometimes it doesn't play out the way you'd think. So it's harder and harder now to see the guys you want to see live. I think that's the point, even at college, is that to see that live wrestling match for Jordan Burroughs, you had to go to New York City this year, or you had to go to Lincoln, Nebraska, or you had to fly to Kazakhstan or another country, wherever he was competing. That's not good. We need
it's
to
not ideal, that. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, yeah, ideal would be better. I mean, of course you can see these matches, but we need to,
it's hard to grow the fan base with that.
Yeah. Cause
when we've talked time and time and time again about the disconnect between college wrestling and international style wrestling in the United States, we'd love to see more people get behind freestyle and Greco-Roman wrestling at the senior level. It's, to me, and I think to you too, the most entertaining brand of wrestling.
It's phenomenal. It really is. It's so much fun. And
just haven't been able to quite unlock that for the wrestling masses yet.
Yeah. Because we forget this. I know I do. I can't put you in that boat, but I just forget that people aren't 100% invested like we are, and that a lot of teams, they're fans of the college program. They follow their guys, and once that season's over, they're on to the next thing, and there's an actual off season. And I guess I don't.
It is hard to believe that people have lives beyond, you know,
beyond wrestling. I don't understand it. How could you not be all in with wrestling? But it is a direction I hope we can go and we can change. And I think the Olympic fever will take over a little bit, though. I think with the Olympics coming in, just funny things happen when the Olympic trials come around. And as we were talking last show, there's just names of people. We were talking about age group world medalists, and there were some that popped in my head that I haven't even thought about that I don't think we mentioned, like Joey McKenna. I think
were you 23 world silver medal or bronze medalist?
Yep. I don't think we mentioned him last time on the show. If we did, I apologize. But just again, all these medalists from age group to senior medalists coming into the Olympic trials, it really.
Ty Avals.
Yeah.
As they were pronouncing his name over in Poland.
Yeah. I don't think we mentioned him.
Nope.
So
U23 world bronze.
Yeah. So just some stat competition.
As they were pronouncing McKenna over in Poland as well. Josef MC Kenna.
That's what they said?
Yep.
You got to be kidding me.
That's what they were pronouncing it. Josef MC Kenna. Ty Avals.
Man, they were getting into
Mitchell
it.
Mitchell MC Key.
That's phenomenal.
Yep.
That's phenomenal. Well, and we'll end with this before we get to our guests. We're excited about things and things coming up here. Alex Clemson is our guest today. He's the head wrestling coach at Maryland. This will be good for me because I have never talked to him and really get his vision for what's going on in a Big Ten school. He was at Missouri for years, and so he's going to take his philosophy and build up the Maryland program. And that's just a part of the country that's thriving for high school, but got to be able to make that connection and get a couple blue chip recruits to your program. And I think Rutgers has kind of paved the way, having two national champions and just saying we can do it in house with New Jersey talent. And they certainly did, but the talent's out there on the East Coast. Yeah. They have it. Like it down to what they have. And
Kyle Snyder, Helen Maroulis, Aaron Brooks, Pat Downey.
Four right there.
Miles Martin is not from Maryland, but he wrestled in Maryland in high school.
Okay. So there's five people that you can tap into that's a good start. You get those guys, you're doing pretty well for yourself. But I just got a kick out of it. You were talking about going to a Yankees game, and you just weighted some percentages, and you said maybe 1%, moved up to 30%. Actually flying from Cedar Falls and going to a New York Yankees game for playoff baseball. And it just makes me laugh because the best case scenario for someone is to weight something at 50-50, which you never said, but 50-50 for anyone who's listening, it's the biggest cop out in the world. Because you're equally right. No matter what you do, if you say, what do you think the chances are that Penn State's going to win or Iowa? I think 50-50. I think that's, and you didn't say it necessarily. I knew you weren't going to go, but 50-50, don't use it because it's the biggest cop-out. It's either you're going or you're not going. It's zero or 100. Because even if you say 99%, you still have 1% that you can cop out on. So either you're going to do it or you're not going to do it. That's the way it's got to be.
I was still on the fence until about 1 a.m. Saturday morning for going out to New York for game two.
You were on the fence.
I was. Oh. And what happened was, is I got done putting this show together for a week ago, and I looked, and United would no longer accept award travel miles.
Okay.
And there, I just hemmed and hawed too long. and
oh man,
I knew I would wake up Saturday and wish that I had gone. And then I watch my alma mater play football on TV and really wish I had gone after watching that. And Didi Gregorius hits a grand slam.
Gee,
Yankees cruise.
Gee. It wasn't meant to be,
but game three, but Minneapolis, Kyle,
what you got to explain is what playoff baseball, you're a Yankees fan, which if you've listened to the show, you know, Andrew is a Yankees fan, but what it does to your blood pressure when you watch playoff baseball when the Yankees are playing, try to articulate that, what it feels like, because hey, people can relate to this. If you're a fan of a resume, you feel like death when you're watching a close match. And I think back to the Iowa-Iowa State meet. If you watch that, if you're a fan of Iowa or Iowa State and you watch that 133-pound match when it comes down to the last one and DeSanto gets thrown to his back, I mean, you're about to have a coronary. You're about to be put under. And it's happened. I think we've talked about that where Ben Peterson was truly in a heart attack match. Someone had a heart attack from watching a Ben Peterson match at the 1976 Olympics.
Wow.
Truly, like he was so amped up because it was going back and forth and he pulled it out in the last couple seconds. The guy had a heart attack and died. So I don't know if you're on the death's door, but you,
I hope not.
You do get a, your heart rate gets raised. You get pretty intense. It's a tough.
Tell you what, I keep it pretty calm most of the year and watch them. I don't know, probably 120, 130 times a year. And don't really get too worked up over those regular season games, but once it turns October, it's a whole different deal.
But I will say this, wrestling is the hardest sport to watch when you care about the athlete on the mat.
Think so?
Oh, absolutely. Why so? Because it's personal. They're out there by themselves. It's
nobody to hide
match.
Behind.
Nobody hide. And it's a short match. It's not like you have this game that can play out and momentum. It's like you've got 7 minutes or whatever, and it's tight. Every point counts. If it's a, you know, if it's a big match, if it's the marquee match, if it's a David Taylor, Kyle Dake, you know that every point, every move, every counter move is going to play a role. And if you're a parent or a fan and you care if Kyle Dake wins, you care if David Taylor wins, that's heart stopping because it's, you're all wrapped into it. Whereas hey, baseball takes what, 3.5. You can see some things happening and your team can come through, or football. You saw the Patriots do that in the Super Bowl where the odds went down to nearly zero and then they came back and won. So there's always this hope in other sports, but it really is in wrestling. It is personal. And I know that from watching people that I care about. It's hard to take a step back from it. It really is. Have you had that wrestler in your life that you really wanted to see? You've been covering it for so long. Was there anyone that really made you?
Yeah, I mean, there's some people that I developed friendships with that you certainly want to see have success. I think I've, for the most part, like done a pretty good job of like detaching myself from getting too emotionally invested to the point where it interferes with me trying to do my job. But, you know, there've been other instances where I'm not in so much of a working situation where you want to see somebody flourish and have success.
Admittedly, even with the Americans, man, I wanted to see Jordan Burroughs win. And that first round match, it was intense just standing there and watching that 11 to 10 match come down to the wire and wondering what's going to happen. So your emotions get toyed with. We got to get to our interview. Alex Clemson is coming up next. He's our guest on the mat. Our guest today is the brand new head wrestling coach at Maryland. Kind of brand new. You've had it for a few weeks, few months here, but Alex Clemson is our guest. How are you, Alex?
I'm well, thanks. I appreciate y'all having me on. Yeah, I took the job in May, so been a little bit of a blitzkrieg back and forth to get my family moved out to Maryland, but we're all settled out here and we're having a lot of fun.
Why'd you want to be a head coach? What is it about going this route that intrigued you?
I'm probably a better chief than an Indian, just by nature, how I'm wired. I just felt like it was probably time, you know, for me to have a chance to do everything the way I wanted to. Working for Coach Smith at Missouri the last 5 years was a great opportunity. We see the world very similarly. We see how to train student athletes and who to recruit and what values, you know, are placed on different components. So it made it easy to be his Indian, to be his right hand because of that. But at the same time, you know, I started getting the itch to just, man, there's a couple little things I do different, or maybe I would have offered this kid differently, or I would train this guy slightly different. And eventually it's just harder and harder to bite your tongue. You want to have the chance to do everything your way and see if you can make your way better than other guys' ways. So more than anything, I just wanted the challenge and wanted the opportunity to really test myself again. I felt like I was my growth maybe had stopped, and that's not fun, you know. So as for as much as Brian had empowered me and for as many responsibilities that he had given me, which he did a lot, at the end of the day, I wasn't, you know, I didn't have final say on things. And I ultimately really wanted that, and I'm relishing the opportunity here at Maryland to have it.
What does that mean, though? Because I think there could be a negative connotation to that, and I don't think that's what you mean. But if you want final say and you have to bite your tongue, does that put extra stress on you that you just say, I need to get out? Does it put strain on the relationship with Brian? Take us through all of that.
No, I mean, yeah, there's no negative connotation there, right? I mean, Coach Smith, he's arguably the best coach in the country, or one of them for sure. No one would ever say he's not in the top five right now. So when he and I would disagree, it's like more than anything, it's just like your pride or your ego a little bit, but yeah, you can always walk out of those meetings going, well, the guy is really good at what he does. He definitely has his reasoning and he has his track record. And so I just have to sit back and see how it goes now. And then if he was right, awesome. Our team is going to be better for it. And if I was right, then he'll listen to me next time on it. And we'll be better for it. So it was more just like from the sense of, I didn't want to have to ask for permission all the time on everything anymore. Right. Or the things that maybe I had to still, because he'd given me a lot of leeway and a lot of rope to do a lot of great things. So I felt like my hands were in so many things that, you know, I'd had a good opportunity to grow a lot and do a lot of things, but at the same time, it wasn't everything. And, I think I was ready for it to be everything. Brian and I have a really good relationship. Anytime you work for somebody for that long, you're going to have ups and downs and disagreements, and there's different stressors that are involved, but for the most part we got along really good, and we still communicate, and will probably always be a mentor for me. So I'm fortunate to have worked with him.
How do you take what you just said there, knowing what you know, being an assistant, and then applying that to your coaching staff? What conversations did you have so that they know they have input,
I'm sorry, guys. I lost you for a second. Okay. Can you repeat that?
Sure. How do you take what you just said there about being an assistant coach and apply it to your assistant coaches? What conversations do you have?
Well, I think you got to communicate, right? Like, the more upfront you can be on things and the more clear you can make expectations, then the happier everyone can be, because nothing goes unmet on either side. If you want something done, or if you want something done a certain way, people can't read your mind. They need to know. And so I think it's your job as a leader, first and foremost, to be a really, really strong communicator. And hopefully the two guys that I've got working for me, who I think are phenomenal, feel that way, that I'm not just hanging them out to dry or, you know, letting them float in the wind a little bit, that I'm giving them good direction, but then also giving them rope to do it their way a little bit within the constraints or the confinements of what I'd like to see. So there's some balance there. And I think as we all grow in our role here and we learn Maryland better, we learn each other better and, you know, what works and what doesn't work, I'll continue to give them more freedom and they'll continue to earn more rope and we'll all be better because of it.
I think in wrestling more than most sports that the name recognition, what your athletic credentials are, really plays into fans' minds. You don't have the bells and whistles as far as being an Olympic champion or anything like that. You have an All-American honor. But how do you overcome lack of athletic name recognition to become an effective coach?
That's a really good question. We talk about it a lot in our sport, in different circles, with different people. But, you know, Brian doesn't even have an All-American title behind his name, and he's one of the best coaches in the country. Tim Flynn, my college coach, was seventh one time. There's plenty of guys out there that are really good coaches that maybe didn't have the world teams or the Olympic medals. And I'm not sure what the reason is for our sport with that. You look at, you know, basketball and football, that's not the case for the most part. You know, Bill Belichick was a Hall of Fame football player. Yeah, he's the best football coach maybe ever in the history of the sport. So I don't understand our sport for that. So I don't really agree with it. And I think it's a weird intricacy of our sport or a nuance of our sport. But I think I have to prove myself, unfortunately. And I think I had to do that more than some people probably to get the head coaching job that I currently have. And I spent 12 years as an assistant in some capacity and five of them at a program where we were fourth, sixth, fifth, sixth, sixth. If we were in football and basketball, I probably would have been plucked a lot sooner and had, you know, different opportunities, you know, and it's just not the way it is. And so we'll have to grind and get the right kids and coach them up and find a few diamonds in the rough. You know, we're selling here opportunity. We're not selling history. We're selling a vision. We're not selling past results. And so we got to get the right kids that want to buy into that and the families that can see that and have faith in us and our ability to get their sons to earn one of the best degrees in America and become a Big Ten champ and an NCAA champ. And somebody's going to do it, right? I didn't come to lose. I didn't leave Missouri, a place that I was safe and stable, and take my family out of the Midwest to come out here to the DMV and join the juggernaut of the Big Ten to keep getting 14th. I assure you that. So, just need to communicate with the right families and keep getting in front of kids and explaining our vision for them. And the right kids will come and we'll coach them up and we'll have success and that'll beget more success.
Alex, can you explain that vision to us? You know, what your plan is, what your vision is?
Yeah. So I want to recruit the state, obviously first in the region, second, and then areas and locations where myself and my staff have connections in recruiting hotbeds or places that have, you know, produced other kids in the past that have had good results. And we're going to find the kids that want to do it the right way, that really want to be student athletes. You know, we're a top 10 public school. We compete in the best league in the country. And I'm going to require my kids to live a lifestyle that they can be proud of, whether their mom's there or their mom isn't there. Right. And so I want young men who are going to toe the line and compete at a really high level. So when we get the right kids and we can train them properly, we're going to have great results. And we've been connecting with alums and donors across the region as well, raising money and trying to increase our resources here and do some dynamic things to give our student athletes a better experience. And, you know, it's going to take time. I keep saying that Rome wasn't built in a day, but some a-hole had to start laying brick. And right now we're that a-hole laying brick. And if that excites you, if something different excites you, you want to be not just a name on a wall, but you want to be a wall, come here. So we're gonna get it going. I'm not gonna say, hey, we're gonna be top 25 in 3 years or we're going to have the same trajectory that Chris has had at Wisconsin or anything like that. I'm not going to paint myself into that corner. I just know that the kids that we have are working really hard. I'm requiring them to live clean. We're going to compete to the fullest of our abilities. And at the end of the day, you know, good things are going to happen because of it.
The first thing you said there was we're going to recruit the state. And I think about the program you came from, and maybe no program across the country, high-level program, did a better job of recruiting their state than Missouri. How were you guys able to lock down the borders, really identify the best kids in state, and make them, you know, want to go to Columbia?
It's done with relationships. I mean, I think obviously me being from that state and having roots in that state helped Brian kind of continue. I think we kind of together took it to another level. He was doing a pretty good job of it before me. I think that's maybe one of the areas that I helped elevate his program even more. But it was done with relationships, whether it was with the kids or the parents or the different gatekeepers in the process, you know, club coaches, high school coaches, athletic directors. Just again, getting in front of people, communicating what, you know, Tiger style was all about when I was at Missouri. And so now we're doing the same thing. I've been up to Baltimore a couple of times. I've been to Gaithersburg a couple of times. I've been in the DC, you know, been down to McDonough, out to different places, St. Joe's, St. James. I'm sure we'll get to St. Paul's eventually. You know, I can name 100 places we're going to get to, and we're just going to get in front of these kids and these coaches and let them get a feel for who we are and what we're about, and you know that it's important for us to, you know, lock the borders down. There's been lots of talent come out of Maryland recently. You know, you think about you know, different kids that had success in the Big Ten, and then even heck, Helen, right? So there's strong high school wrestling in Maryland. Maybe it's not as deep of a state as some others because we don't have the population numbers, but doesn't mean there's not really good kids here that can compete at a high level. And it's our job to identify them, attract them, retain them, develop them, and help them get an amazing degree.
You mentioned some of that talent. Includes Kyle Snyder. It includes Aaron Brooks. It includes Pat Downey. Give us your recruiting pitch. How are you going to get those guys if you could retroactively give them a recruiting pitch?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think there's a difference when you wrestle for your home state, right? I think there's, I went to Edinburgh. It's a place that loves wrestling, right? And I lived there year round. And so the people in the community and around the state got to know me and see me, but I wasn't a PA kid. And for as passionate of a fan base that Edinburgh has and that program has, they still didn't cheer for me like they cheered for the PA kids, no matter how well I did, right? It's just, I wasn't one of theirs. And I think the same thing can be seen around the country. The Iowa fans, when you put an Iowa boy in their lineup, oh, Carver Hawkeye explodes even more. Okie State, think about what's going on right now with, you know, the backing for Dayton or G, or those fans, they're rabid for Okies. And same thing at Missouri. Brock Muller, Jay Nierman, Jaden Cox, those kids are beloved. Because the fan base knows them. There's a special connection with them. And so if you want that kind of a connection, if you want that kind of electricity, if you want that kind of fan connectivity, you should stay home. And you should get one of the best degrees you can while wrestling in the premier conference in our country and help me build something really special so that when we look back, I mean, you guys are going to be the change. You're going to be the difference. And be something that is that no one can ever take away from me. They can't say, oh, that place was already rolling. You're just another notch on the belt. You're another plaque on a wall. No. You guys built the wall. You guys made this the place to be. And we can do it together. I've had a success everywhere I've been, right? There's been a bump at every program I've been a part of. We're going to do the same thing at Maryland, and we can do it together.
Let's go back to the idea of assistant coaches, because I think a lot of times assistant coaches in wrestling are just viewed as glorified workout partners, and that you're supposed to have a lightweight coach and an upperweight coach, and that they're supposed to bang with those guys. And it's really more than that. It's more the developmental side. How do you kind of get out of that so that they're doing more than just being workout partners?
Yeah, I mean, the two guys I hired, they are younger and they're different sizes. And we'll be announcing a new volunteer hire here shortly, in the next couple of days. he's got to tie up some loose ends on his part. So I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but I'm excited about his addition. But it was more for me about personalities and can I trust them and can I empower them? Are they intelligent? Do they live their lives right? Do they treat their spouse appropriately? Do they take care of their children the way a father should? Are they intelligent? I wanted those qualities more than the wrestling acumen. That just, again, our sport plays so much, puts so much emphasis on that. It's funny. So when I was, you know, sitting down and looking at people to attract, I wanted really high character individuals. And that's what I went after. And I interviewed some really good candidates and some amazing guys applied to the jobs. I was humbled by it, really. But the two guys I chose, I had long-term relationships with and I knew them. And I knew there was a special extra level of trust there. And I'm really fortunate that I could attract them, that we could get these guys here, and that Mr. Evans and Mark Sherburn would give me the resources I needed to not just get these guys to come out and look at it. But I said, hey, I want you guys to not just come look and think, can you coach with me, but can you see yourself being here 5 to 7, 10 years? Cause that's how long I'm going to be here. I'm here indefinitely. The best staffs in the country are together. You look at what Kale's done and what they're doing at Iowa and different places. Those guys are together for several years and they have synergy. And I want that here in College Park. And these guys said they could. And with the resources that the university gave me to go out and get them, they were comfortable making that kind of a commitment. So I love the guys I've got.
Do you build a relationship with the previous coach, Kerry McCoy?
I've known Kerry since I was a 19-year-old kid. He used to come to Edinburgh and train with Bruce. Oh man, it was so cool. Bruce and Mako and Fox and Jermiel Myers, Rulon were all in a workout one night. I watched them go just parterre. And Bruce was at, you know, that time, this is 15 years ago, maybe now. I watched Bruce go parterre and turn all of those guys and nobody could turn Bruce. It was incredible. But yeah, so I got to know Kerry there and then, just around wrestling, you know, wrestling is a small network. And, Kerry's a cerebral guy and he's a really good person. And I think, you know, you're attracted to people like that, that are smart and sharp and live their life the right way. And so Kerry and I just got to know each other just over the years from different things. And I think actually maybe he took my sister out to lunch one time, before he met his wife, Abby. And, I've known Kerry a long time. We've actually had lunch in College Park a couple times and he sent me a couple text messages to congratulate me on different things. And he's fallen here and has offered to be a resource when I need help with a question on a system or a person. Or Kerry is a really, really quality human being. And I'm sure we'll continue to be friends for a lot of years after this.
Who are you going to build the program around at this point? Do you have someone that stands out that is going to be your solid go-to guy?
Yeah, we've got a bunch of kids, actually. I mean, the recruiting class that they signed last fall is pretty strong. There's a local kid, Jack Parr, who I think can be really competitive. And there's a young man out of Wadsworth, Ohio, named Michael North, who's really blossomed. He's a tough nose, hardworking son of a gun. And those two guys kind of stand out, but the whole class. And, you know, we've had some really good early recruiting efforts as well. I can't, you know, obviously comment on kids that have verbally committed or kids that we think are close. I mean, but I feel good about where we're at and we have some big potential for the future. So I think it's going to be a collective effort. And also right now, currently on our team, kid that'll wrestle this year, a kid named Kyle Cochran, somebody to really watch out for. He beat Hidley in the Super 32 finals his senior year. He redshirted his first year, obviously, and then was injured last year, and so wasn't in the lineup. But I expect him to compete at a really high level right away for us. He's very athletic. He's very hardworking. He's a tough kid, and he's got a little bit of swagger and edge to him. So I think this is a perfect place for him.
I think I read that you still have the highest GPA of any Edinburgh wrestler in the history of the program. That's pretty cool. What were your study habits like?
So I went to school to study marketing, and my wife and I actually were high school sweethearts, and we broke up. And so I thought I was going to run her father's company at some point. So I was like, I'm going to get out of this. I'm going to do something different. And Tim stopped me and said, no, you should stay in business, you know, do something different. You don't like marketing. And he's like, I have my MBA, and the way college athletics is going, it's more run like a business. He's like, I think it's a perfect degree. Cause I decided I wanted to be a wrestling coach. And I was like, ah, maybe I need to get a sports management, you know, something different. So I sat down, I was like, well, I'll do finance. And, taking on the second major was tough. And, I was really close to a math minor, and I'm good with numbers, but I'm not great at calc. And so I struggled a little bit. You just have to be disciplined, right? You have to make good choices. And, I went to class. I think that was the biggest thing that helped me, is I went to every class. I just never skipped. And that's twofold, right? Professor C, you probably get the benefit of the doubt here and there. And then also you're not missing any material. You're getting all the extra nuggets and trinkets. And that's something we talk about here a lot. You know, I only have two team rules. It's you go to class and you live clean. And going into class means that you're going to go to everything academically related. If that's a tutor, if that's a study hall, if that's a mentor appointment, or a class, you're going. And then when you're going to class, you're going to hand in everything fully complete and on time. And if you don't do that, then I kick you out of practice. And you'll have to make your studies up during practice time. And if you're not practicing, you're not competing. If you're not competing, I'm not sure why you're here. So academics are a big part of our culture here and our push for the future. And then the live and clean part, simple, right? You're going to embody what it means to be a good standing person and an honest young man. And I'm not going to read about you in the paper. I'm not going to get phone calls from my administrators. I'm not going to hear from police. You're going to make good decisions. At no point does, you know, going to that frat party and doing keg stands help your quest to be a national champion. So why would you do it? It's pretty simple. So I want kids that want to do it the right way.
Does your mind ever shut off of wrestling?
No. My wife would, she'd probably like to take that question, but no, unfortunately it doesn't. I shouldn't say unfortunately. I love what I do. I never feel like I work. You hear people say that, right? Like, oh, you never work a day in your life. You do what you love. I love what I do. I feel like I get to play and have fun and build friendships and meet people and see the world. And so I love it, but it does go hard. And sleeping at night's been a little different as a head coach. It's taken a little longer to fall asleep. And I've woken up a few times in the middle of the night, like, oh, I need to do this or make that note. Or I run hot, as you guys can tell, right? But I think you have to find balance. So even if I can't shut my mind off, I have to shut it off for my family. So there's times where I'll put my phone away, or I'll try to detox, or an evening or a weekend here or there, where I have to pour into my wife and my children, because their world doesn't revolve around wrestling, right? Just because mine does, doesn't mean theirs does. And just because wrestling is the fourth most important thing in my life behind the three people in my family, doesn't mean it is for them. So, I have to, you know, really work on finding that balance. And my wife has reminded me recently that I'm sucking at that. So, I have to challenge myself and hold myself more accountable there so I can be a better father and husband for sure.
Do you find this to be true, though? We had an interview with Jay Robinson and just asked him about the difference between head coach and assistant. And he just said, hey, when you're assistant, you can question the coach. You can take your guys to the side, work with them. There's nothing on you. Have you felt that pressure of like, all right, it's a different ball game?
You know, I haven't yet. And I think that's probably a credit to Brian and the everything he let me be involved in and how much empowerment he gave me. Maybe I'll feel differently as we get into competing and, the wins and losses, you know, start to stack up. Maybe I'll feel differently then. I think the other thing too, is again, the two guys I hired that we have here right now, the other young man that we're going to bring on staff here shortly, I'm really confident in them and their abilities. And so, I haven't felt like that. Gosh, I hope I don't either. Right. I really enjoy what I do, and I've only been an assistant coach, and I've enjoyed it and loved it so far. So I hope that doesn't change for me as a head coach. I mean, I've always felt like whatever program I was a part of, when we lost, it was maybe it didn't go in my personal column, but it still was on me. And when we won, I probably felt like it was somewhat because of me, right? And you take that ownership on if you really care about it. So yeah, gosh, I hope I don't feel like that.
Do you have conversations with Brian, or did you, and then do you have conversations with your staff just on dealing with people, with the media, just because my first interaction with you was just calling you. You answered an unknown number and you were gracious about coming on. You were ready to go. And that plays a big factor. And when I think of people or coaches that were good at that, I think of Brian Smith, I think of Rob Cole. Do you have conversations with your athletes, with your assistant coaches about how to handle other people?
I try to just be myself, right? Not everyone's going to love me or not everyone's going to love what I say, but if I don't say what's true, or if I don't really embody who I am, then I'm not going to like myself. And that's one more person that wouldn't have liked me to begin with anyways. So you just try to remember that, you know, don't drop an F-bomb, because I've been known to do that, right? And stay on topic, which is important, but just be yourself. Let your personality come out a little bit. Not everyone's going to like you for you. And so you might as well just be yourself, because they won't like the phony version of you either. With my assistant coaches, again, I hired two really quality guys. So if a person calling them out of the blue and wanted an interview, be fully comfortable taking it and preaching what we're about and sharing the vision of what our future looks like and letting the world kind of know who they are and what makes them tick and why we're different. So we definitely talk about that. And I think more than anything, Brian let me sit in on interviews occasionally where he'd be like, hey, I'm going to talk to Track Wrestling, or I'm going to talk to this outlet, or I'll, you know, have this interview, you know, and he would let me sit in and just kind of hear the conversations, you know, and I think some of it was to get his insight, but he also was really good about, he knew this is what I wanted to do, and he was always mentoring me for it. And I'm, you know, like I said, I'm gracious for that. And then you just watch other people, right? I think about the football coach at Missouri, Barry Odom. He gives one of the best interviews I've ever seen. So you want to make sure you're communicating the right things about your program and your staff and yourself, and try to just collect your thoughts and but still be you. And so, yeah, if somebody calls and wants to talk to me, I'll talk to anybody. I want to get the word out, and I want people to know that things are happening different in College Park, and we're moving in a new direction. We've got awesome support and resources that are coming in, and people are behind me, you know, with fundraising, and there's been some good bounce here and some good energy, and I'm excited about that, and I feel really blessed to have it.
Making gains is tough. You're in a tough conference, the Big Ten Conference. How do you move up a couple spots? How do you make gains with such a beast of a conference with every team really being good?
Yeah, no, it's true, right? So being at Missouri, right, we're in the SEC for football, so I think it's very similar, SEC football and Big Ten wrestling. Big Ten wrestling is probably even maybe another step up from SEC football. But that opportunity, right, you're going to be able to attract the higher caliber kid. You're going to be able to attract the more talented individual, and so it's our job to identify the kids that are talented like that, that fit our system and our culture, and go out and get them, and then whether it's those future kids or the kids we have right now, we need to be really proficient in our training. And we need to focus, I think, a little more on some individual development and attention and skill, so that, you know, these guys have an opportunity to compete to the fullest of their abilities. So we're going to really focus on individual development, putting these guys in their positions that they feel comfortable that they can be successful in. And we'll continue to recruit, you know, more talented kids and higher character kids and true student athletes. And we're just going to work really hard. I mean, I don't think there's any secret in our sport that it takes a lot of hard work. I think I was telling a recruit and a family this. I do think you can outlive people, though. I think you can be more disciplined. I think you can go to bed at night sooner. I think you can not go to the parties as much. I think you can put fewer bad things in your body. I think you can do it more and more and more and more and more and more. And so when you have that consistency with those lifestyle choices, then you can maybe outlive people. And that's how you close the gap or pass people that were ahead of you or you're equal. And so that's what we're going to do here. We're going to work hard and we're going to try to outlive people and turn this thing around. So I'm excited for this challenge personally. And these kids are too. The kids that I inherited, I have 33 guys in my room right now that are awesome kids and they're working really hard. And some of this, they didn't sign up for, right? They didn't sign up for me. They signed up for another guy and they've been awesome about buying in and believing and having faith in our process and the future of our program and the direction of our staff wants to take them. So I give the kids that are here a lot of credit for the work that they've done since I took the job and the commitment they made over the summer and how hard they've tried this fall to put themselves in position to have a more competitive season.
How do you manage that? How do you massage those relationships when you're coming in new?
I just try to be upfront with them. You know, I told them when I took the job, I said the 30 kids on this roster are the most important kids to me in the world besides the two children I have out in Brookville. That we won't turn this program around with our first recruiting class or our second recruiting class. We have to turn it around right now with you guys. And I need y'all to buy in. I need you guys to sacrifice more. That I need you guys to give more so that we can attract the right kids in the future, that we can get more talented kids, that we can get more kids that want to, you know, be true student athletes and that want to buy into this vision. Because if I can't get these kids to buy in, then when we bring recruits in, the recruits aren't going to mesh well with them. And they're going to see things that, you know, aren't lining up with what I'm saying. You know, the team's walk will be different than the coach's talk. And then I look like a liar and that's not going to help me. So I really wanted these guys to understand that I want to help them have every opportunity and then some to have the best experience moving forward that they can. They chose to come to one of the best public institutions in the world. They chose to wrestle the premier wrestling conference in the country. And I want to help them achieve all their goals and have a good time doing it. So I've really tried to pour into them and make them feel that they're special, even though I didn't recruit them or that I didn't sign them or that I haven't been their coach in the past, that they are important to me and that they do matter, but maybe more than they realized. And we've had a good bond so far. I feel like we're meshing well and I know there's been some shock and awe moments for them, but there has been for me too. And I just keep telling them, hey, we're in this together, right? Like you didn't sign to wrestle for me, but I didn't sign any of your kids either. But the fact of the matter is we're here together and we need to find a way to work together and we need to find a way to have fun together and we need to get the most out of each other. And the only way to do that is to be upfront and honest and to communicate and come to work every day, pouring into one another. They've held up to their end of the deal so far. So
recruiting's moving faster than ever now. And your situation, your situation, you come in and the 2019 class, you're at the finish line by the time you arrive there, pretty much in 20.
No, that class was done, right?
Yep. I mean,
2019 was done. And then 2020s, when you look at the big board and where kids were landing, a lot of kids were committed or a lot of kids, when we started calling them, were like, hey coach, I've already, you know, I've got the five schools I want to look at. It's hard to break through. So we've had to really, you know, be diligent in our work to attract them. And then, you know, working hard and setting those relationships for the 21s. The thing that's made it hard for us is I feel like because of that, we're double recruiting right now. I think a lot of teams are probably focused more on their 21s. And we're focused on both 20s and 21s. And it's made it hard on our staff. My guys are working really hard. They're on the phone late at night. They're, you know, at clinics, they're at home visits. They're, you know, we're doing unofficial visits constantly. We've had three recruiting weekends on campus already. We're about to have a fourth. We probably will have a fifth at some point during the season. It's been a lot of work but they knew what they signed up for. And I knew what I signed up for. And, but I do feel like we're behind a little bit because of that. That's why I said, unfortunately. So, it is what it is. And we've got to make the most of it. And we've got to get the kids that can see our vision and buy into our future and coach them up and continue to do that. And it will provide more opportunities to higher level kids in the future. And, we're going to grow in all facets as this thing gets going. But we, you know, for sure it's been a process and not one that I like to be behind in.
as we mentioned, you were an assistant coach at Missouri. How bad did you take it to Jaden Cox? Did you give? Were you easy on him, or did you just beat on him? I mean, what? How bad did you take it to him?
Full disclosure, I don't know if I ever wrestled Jaden Cox in like a full live go. I take that back. I mean, definitely a couple times. But I, when I came to Missouri, my body was in a bad place, and I told Brian that, and I needed to have a couple of surgeries, and so I wasn't able to wrestle those first couple of years. I was at Missouri very much, and then Father Time, right, is kind of caught up with me, and so I wasn't a super hands-on wrestling coach at Missouri. I just, you know, those days, and for whatever reason, it kind of gone past me. So I drill and I spar and did some more of that hands-on technical development. But in terms of wrestling live, you couldn't pay me enough money to wrestle Jaden Cox right now. You see what he does to people?
It's ridiculous.
He's the best wrestler in the world, regardless of weight class for any country. I don't care what anybody says.
I mean, you had to see the writing that was on the wall with that dude, didn't you?
First time we ever worked out was in middle of June of 2014. And we didn't wrestle live, but we drilled and we sparred. We might have gone a couple short goes because Jaden probably like suckered me into it. And we got done and I told him, I said, listen, you're going to be a multiple time world and Olympic medalist. And I don't know if that's a champ. I don't know. You know, I go, you'll win as much as you want to win. And Jaden's a little bit of a skeptic. And I don't think he didn't know me well enough. If I'd have known he was that, I wouldn't have told him it right away because I think it hurt our relationship early on. I think he thought like I was like trying to like sell him a little bit or like snuggle up next to him a little bit. But I felt it right away. Like I knew how special he was. I'd had been fortunate enough to work out with some really high level guys throughout my career, whether it was drilling or live or whatever. And the only other time I had felt anything similar to what I felt with Jaden was when I was at Oregon State and Les Gutches and I just kind of built a friendship. He's also a business guy. And, he was working at a bank in Oregon State or in Corvallis. And the only other time I ever felt anything similar to Jaden, I knew Jaden was even more dynamic than Les was, just different athlete, right? And I knew right away. So funny story about Jaden with the 2016 team, him cutting to 86 kilos was actually my idea. I went into Brian's office. I used to come up with ideas all the time, and some of them Brian would be like, oh, that's great. And sometimes he'd be like, get out of here, you're crazy. So I went into his office and I was like, why don't we just cut Cox to 86 kilos? He's like, what? I was like, well, he weighed out the other day at like 93. He was under, like, that's not that far. It's night before weigh-ins. Like, yeah, it'll suck for him, but he'll probably win a medal. And Brian was like, oh gosh, you know, maybe so. And we kicked it around a little bit. And then Brian was like, we got to, you know, see if Jaden would be into this. And we had Jaden come in and sit down and we kind of pitched it to him. And he was like, all right, well, you know, let's see how low I can get, how good I can go a couple times. And so we did a couple test runs where he came in at like 93, 94, and we worked out. And he was like, I'm going to do it. I think I can do it. And then, of course, he says that. And then like the last couple of kilos, I know were like always miserable for him. Some of the stories I heard about him making weight, being in the sauna, and sticking his lips to the door and begging for Mike or Brian to let him out of the sauna. Or Coach Lou Roselli has shared some funny stories with me, and Jaden has confirmed them all. And, it's just, but he, you know, he made that trade, right? And he hurt a little bit to have a legacy that's forever going to be very special in our sport, and super proud of Jaden and who he is and what he does for our country and how he carries himself and how he competes. He's a special kid.
What's your guess on which weight he'll be at for 2020?
Oh man. I don't know. The last time I talked to him, he told me 86, but, that was a little while ago. I don't know. I'm really torn on that. What weight I think is best for him. Somebody floated me. And this was crazy. Somebody said to me a couple months ago that they thought Jaden should go up and Snyder should go up and we should get our best six guys in the lineup. And I'm like, well, geez, we're bumping Gwiz out then, who's a multiple time world medalist. And they're like, yeah, but no matter what, somebody's getting bumped out, right? Whether it's Dake or Taylor or Jaden or Snyder or Gwiz. And he's like, that's just the way it is with six weight classes. It's like, yeah, you're right. It's just, it's nuts. There's only six. So, gosh, I don't know. I think he goes up personally. right? Oh, if he beats Kyle, it shows that he's the best in the world. No one can say that, right? If he beats Kyle, then he beats Abdul Rashid, then no one can say that he's not the best. I think Jaden wants to be the best. That's the Jaden I know, but him and David Taylor have no love loss either, so maybe he wants to go down and beat him out. I don't know. So, gosh, you got to ask Jaden that.
We have, and he won't tell us.
You know what? I wonder if he fully knows, right? I don't know. Yeah. Maybe he's made his mind up. He's truly a tweener, and either way, he's going to probably not be at 100%, right? He'll be maybe a touch undersized if he goes up, and he'll be a touch empty if he goes down. So it's unfortunate that weight class isn't in the Olympics, because he is the perfect size for it.
But what I got to know is, what are you doing tangling with these guys that are jacked beyond belief, and Gutchess and Cox? I mean, these guys are loaded, and they're huge. Well,
when I was wrestling with Wes, it was right when I was out of school. I was getting an MBA. I was the director of ops at Oregon State, and I just ran into Les in town, and he's like, "Hey, you know, how's the NBA going?" "Oh, it's good." Just got to go, because he got to stay in NBA. And I was like, "Hey, you know, can I get you to come in to work out sometime? Just, you know, maybe go over some high crotch stuff or some gut wrench stuff." Or he's like, "Sure, I'll come in." And right, he supposedly has a bad back, and he supposedly has been sitting at a desk, and he didn't look like he looks now, right? He's gotten really into bodybuilding and lifting weights, but he was the world class athlete, so he was still pretty fit. But we've gone over some skill and had done some things. And he's like, "Hey, I feel pretty good. Do you want to go a couple short goes?" I wish I had said no. So, right off of the banker's desk, he put a hurt on me. So, but it was a really cool experience to get to learn from him. We probably worked out 25 times together over a 12 to 16 month time, and Les and I have stayed in contact, and he's a really cool guy. Just thankful for his time when I was in Corvallis as a young, you know, coach. I struggled a little bit out there. It was just a different place being on the West Coast and different time zones, and the weather is different, and trying to find your place in the world a little bit as you're going along. It did not come naturally to me. So there was a couple families out there, including the Steiners, the Riches, and the Gutches, that just, you know, really kind of poured into me. And I'm really thankful for that, because if not, I probably wouldn't be in coaching today.
What was it like when you brought Ben Askren in to work out with Jaden Cox? Do you remember those workout matches?
Yeah, so it was really cool watching these two guys that are real cerebral and look at the sport slightly different than most people. So it's fun watching those guys like bounce ideas off each other and to get in different positions. You know, Ben, obviously father and time has caught up with him a little bit. So he's not able to compete maybe at the highest level that he used to be able to, but he's so damn competitive that he sure as heck tries hard. But watching those guys spar and kind of work through some positions and some different ideas on how to attack areas was always really fun and interesting. And Ben, you know, Ben just has his different mind, and so does Jaden. So you put those two together, and it's like a mad scientist laboratory.
What's the difference between a Jaden Cox, Ben Askren, who reached a really high level, and maybe that guy that just was a mid-level All-American? What's the difference between those two athletes?
Jaden's going to be mad at me for saying this, right? Because he really prides himself on his work ethic and his preparation, and he does work really hard. I don't want to take anything away from him on this. So if he listens to this interview or somebody posts a snippet, I want to clarify myself here by saying that he does. I've seen him work. He goes. There's no doubt about it. Jaden's a freak, though. I mean, he's a damn alien. His you know, natural athleticism, or his ability to change directions, change levels, his combination of speed and power and flexibility. I mean, he would be a world champ in probably anything. Like, if he had decided he wanted to play like football, like he kind of joked about, he probably would be in the NFL. Right? People are like, "Oh, he's a little short, maybe he's a little small." No. I'm telling you, he could play in the NFL. If he wanted to be a baseball player, he'd probably be in the major league. He's just, the kid's, he's special. He's a generational athlete. And you don't win four straight world medals by not being that. So I think God blessed him maybe with a little more than he gave other people. On the flip side of that, he is really, really, really competitive. And so when you take that special work ethic and that special athleticism, and then you put the fact that he has a really, really strong desire to win, you get this, right? You get this monster that's arguably the best guy in the world right now. So,
what was Ben Askren blessed with?
Say that again.
What was Ben Askren blessed with?
Well, I didn't get a coach, Ben, right? I wasn't even on the team with him. We're actually the same age. We were on a recruiting visit to Edinburgh, actually, together. He had a friend, a really close high school friend, die in a hind accident while he was on that visit, and he left in the middle of the night, the first night. But just from what Coach Smith tells me, what Brian would say is that Ben's work ethic and his, like, the competitiveness, he said he's, you know, outside of Jaden, never seen anything like it. And, you know, Brian's been individual in wrestling going on 30 years now. And so when you think about all the different people you come across and things, he just said that Ben's just desire to win and his ability to push himself to different depths was extraordinary. So, but you'd have to ask Brian probably the difference between them or what made Ben really special. But when I think of what Brian's always said about Ben was his competitiveness.
All right. You ready to be in some arguments on the sideline and the Big Ten duels on the Big Ten Network?
I've already been in those arguments, right? I mean, that's one thing about me. I'm a vocal guy and I probably let my emotions run hot from time to time. And I've gotten into it with Tom before. Or I've gotten into it with Mark before. And heck, Brandon Agam and I actually have a pretty good relationship. And one time we got into it really bad at the Southern Scuffle and we were both trying to find each other in the back. We were like apologizing to each other at the same time. We just, you know, I really respect Brandon. I hope not, right? I hope maybe I can stay a little calmer, that I can be a little more cerebral. But I'm sure, right, with passion and you pour so much into these guys that it's not even like a personal thing, right? It's just you want so much for your guy because you see how much they give up and how hard they try. And so you want to fight for them, right? Or you want to fight with them. And it will inevitably happen for sure because I know who I am, right, if I'm being honest with myself. So I hope I don't look too much like a, you know what, so.
This has been a lot of fun. Thanks for being on this program. We will be tracking Maryland wrestling throughout the course of the season and in years to come, but thanks for this in-depth interview and we do wish you all the best.
I appreciate it. Anytime, guys, I'd love to talk about Maryland wrestling and what our kids are doing here and why this place is different and special. So I appreciate y'all having me on.
Alex Clemson, thank you. Our first time on the mat with Alex Clemson, and I don't bet much, but I'd bet that program is going to make some strides after hearing what he had to say. He has a plan, has a vision, has the drive for it, and I'm not going to say big things are going to come this season or even next season, but you can see just talking to him that he will probably have some growth in the next few years.
Yeah, I think so. Certainly, you know, you see what he was able to learn from, you know, what he took from experience at Missouri and what they were able to do there. And there are a lot of parallels. I think you can probably glean a lot from Brian Smith about what he's up against there at Maryland with what Brian did at the program, with the program at the University of Missouri. So eager to see.
I think Brian Smith continually gets underappreciated, underrated just from what he does. He just does so many good things and you just always have to go back to where Missouri was. And you remember those days where the Big 12, Big 8 had five teams and it really was the Big 4, Little 1, and Missouri was the joke. And they aren't a joke anymore. They're teams. They're in the MAC now, but they have really built that reputation as being a team that is tough on top, have their own style. You got to be ready to bang if you're going to beat them, regardless of if you're in the Big 10 or Big 12 or any other conference. So really impressive what Missouri's done. And Alex Clemson was a part of that. And I think that he's going to do good things at Maryland. It's been a great show. Enjoyed having Alex Clemson on the program. For Andrew Timothy Hamilton, I am Kyle Klingman. You have been listening to On the Mat.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.